Hi, and welcome to the Upfront Planning Podcast. I'm your host, Jessica. And today I am actually with Ryan. And I don't know if you know, I've been trying to get in touch with you for like a year. You are a hard man to get. You are busy and all over the place. But I'm so excited because we're going to be talking about cul-de-sac. And I had Ryan at the city of Tempe on, and we were talking about how they did it on their side. And I am really excited to hear about like your side, because I've heard you talk at the Arizona Economic Development Conference in Tucson recently. Did a great job. It was awesome. We're all like, tell us more. Everybody there, I think every city was asking like, can you come to my city? Basically. But yeah, so thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
It's great to be here.
What is, so cul-de-sac. Okay. How did you come up with the name cul-de-sac? Do you know? It's like, do you remember what that process was? Or
so it was over dinner. And if you're a kid who grew up in the 90s in Phoenix, the word cul-de-sac evokes warmth and nostalgia and home. And that contrasts with, from the urbanist world, it's became a four-letter word where dendritic streets that disconnect neighborhoods. But the cul-de-sac part of the subdivision was the best part.
Yeah.
Because kids could play in the street.
Oh, yeah.
And they would know their neighbors. They would have the most fun Halloween. And everybody should be able to have that experience. And that irony works really well. And also it meant that the domain was really cheap. And somebody had the trademark in the 90s and it lapsed. So we have that now.
Awesome. Yeah. I actually live in a cul-de-sac. I love it. It's the best. You know, and I remember, like you said, growing up in with cul-de-sacs. And then even as they got kids got older in the cul-de-sac, it was for great parking. You could just line it up any way you wanted. And you had like parties, shut down the street, barbecues, fireworks, everything. So that's awesome. So actually, do you want to just introduce yourself? You know, where what you did, how you came up with, like, I don't know, like, anything about yourself. What's your star sign? I don't know.
So I grew up here in Phoenix and I had an SUV, lived on a golf course, like the full Phoenix experience. And then I went to Europe and the first city I saw was Budapest. And it blew my mind how much better a city like that was, with great transportation and plazas where retailers would know the customers and people would say hi to each other. And they were healthier and happier. And so that was the inspiration for cul-de-sac and seeing a number of different places across the world. The conviction for cul-de-sac came at Open Door. So before this, I started Open Door with my college roommate and some others. And it was so clear that walkable neighborhoods are what people want, that the biggest challenge, we're just not making any more of them in the U.S. because they're illegal through zoning and parking minimums and things like that. But we can build them again. And they're different than the neighborhoods that we built before cars. The neighborhoods that were built before cars are the most in-demand places.
Yeah.
And it's a tragedy that more people can't live in a place like New York. But even in a place like Phoenix, there's some walkable housing that that was built, and you can see that today. But we're building that where residents use a portfolio of transportation options instead of a private vehicle. But cul-de-sac is a, we're a developer and we build car-free and car-light neighborhoods.
I know. I went to see it. I've heard about it forever, but I'm on the east side always, you know, so I was like, I have to go see it. You know, I've heard all about it. I've heard your presentations. I've seen it in PowerPoints and on, in the APA Planning magazine. I've seen it. And it is very cool. I agree with that. It felt very, even just as someone who doesn't live there, it felt like very connected. Like the shop owners all knew each other. They had seen, they're like, talking to each other about, you know, in that, so new when you went to, they knew people coming in. Oh, hey, well, Everett was very connected feeling, even in the hot summer when people are not usually outside, it was very, community engaged and everything. So it was exactly what you're trying to do. You know, did you always, okay, back when you were thinking nostalgia cul-de-sac as a kid, did you ever think you were going to be a developer? Is that was your, always your goal, thinking you'd build places and create new companies and things?
So building cul-de-sac was a dream for a long time. And then it really became the reality. We started the company in 2018. I was at the right spot of my career. And walkability had started to become in the zeitgeist where people realized that this is how people want to live. The National Association of Realtors even has a survey every 3 years now for transportation preferences. And they found that the majority of every generation would pay more to live in a walkable neighborhood, including 92% of Gen Z. And you'd had people that had been using Lyft for years, people that had used electric bikes, light rail. And the big one, the big change was on the horizon, which is Waymo and AV mm-hmm. ride hail. And that's the one that's going to really change everything.
Yeah. I know jurisdictions are still trying to get their heads around it. You know, in Gilbert, they're putting it into Waymo agreements or drop-offs, you know, in their commercial areas. And it's just changed how people get around and everything. And it's like the future of how it's going to be. You don't have to, like you said, it's not overparked. And one of the interesting comments is I was talking to one of the shop owners or people in there, and she was even commenting how, you know, even the parking lot that you have, like it's never full. You know, it's not needed. It's not necessary. It's you can still get around and get everywhere you need without it. And so they just really love that feel that they like, I feel like I'm in Europe, you know, the moving around and everything.
Yeah. You said you went to So Used, our vintage clothing store. They've actually started monitoring the light rail schedule because increasingly more customers are coming on the light rail.
That's smart.
And we have a partnership with Waymo. So a lot of times the Waymo wait is zero because they're already waiting.
Yeah. They're like, they're right there. So when you were doing this project, did you all like always envision the mixed use? How did you always carless, or just you wanted the feel, or what were you thinking?
So we designed for three things: a culture of belonging, transportation freedom, and thriving local businesses. And those are things that we get when we're building for people mm-hmm. instead of for cars. Yeah. And instead of a sea of asphalt, we get 55% landscape space. We get lots of courtyards, a plaza, lots of retail. And that is got a lot of great side effects. It's the best thing that we can do for climate, health, happiness, loneliness, low cost of living, and even low taxes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because it's exactly when you go in there, and you've got like art murals, you've got
lots of local art.
You got the dog areas, you've got all the kid areas and the pool. So it's all the amenities are still there. You know, it's just a more unique community feel. It feels like, and it's weird because it feels like it should be able to be anywhere, but you had to find like a vacant place to take it and start from scratch because no one, like you said, a lot of it has become illegal through zoning. And so you worked with the city on that. How did you approach them? Did you just be like, hey, we've got this idea, and were they receptive, or they were like, what are you talking about, Carlos?
So a lot of developers, they think of, here's the city that I care about and how do I work with them? And then they bang their heads against the wall on how they can change it. You know, you'll hear this a lot from developers in LA, San Francisco, New York, some of the hardest places. We actually started the company in San Francisco, and we knew that that would be a tough mm-hmm. uphill to climb. We wouldn't be open today. So we looked all over the country for a place with the right conditions in place. You needed to have the job and population growth to support a large new project. You needed to have local officials that welcome growth, and you needed to find a great piece of land mm-hmm. where things can pencil.
Oh, yeah. And that's like check Tempe. Yeah, especially like Mayor Woods, he's all for it. You have the space, and then you're so close to ASU, and you've got all the components there. And so is your demographics there? Is it a lot of students, or is it like people who's like starting families? Do you know what your mix is? Like, what are you attracting?
It's quite broad, and it reflects the NAR data that said that this is very multi-generational. And we have students, we have families with kids, we have retired folks, empty nesters, a broad demographic, because this is something that appeals to everyone. Mm-hmm.
Did you have things that you were going, when you're going through the process with the city and even in the design, did you learn some things along the way, or things you weren't anticipating at all?
Lots of things happened that weren't anticipated. There was COVID. There was a supply chain crisis. Big lesson is order the electrical panels ahead of time.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody learned that lesson. You know, we worked with the city. You know, there's not one person that can say yes. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different pieces, each of which can sort of say no. And that means that we worked with the fire department, you need planning, elected officials, the various different departments to understand what mattered for them. And then we realized that we could bring a plan that people could get behind. And now neighbors love it. The city loves it. Mayor Woods says he gets asked about cul-de-sac mm-hmm. all over the country where he goes. Actually, you know, there's a network of 60 mayors that visited, they picked Tempe so that they could come to cul-de-sac, and they visited, and I was next to Corey. You know, they were a key partner of ours, and they were great.
Yeah. So was there something, because, you know, if you talk to the city, I'm not saying, you know, anything, but if you talk to the city, they're like, oh, no, it was fine. We just pushed it through. Was it hard to get to, because some of the codes, you know, like you mentioned with fire and stuff like that, I mean, some of the codes are a little harder to get people on board. They know they want to do what you want, you need to do, but they're just like, how do we do it? Was
yeah.
There, was like the parking or the garbage or like, was there something that was a little more uphill than others?
Yeah. It's, you know, most real estate is just cookie cutter. It's doing what's been done. To do something different with fire, for example, we brought forth a ladder system from Europe that lets us work with the buildings that we have with, and we build fire lanes and things that are compatible with the zoning code in Tempe. The parking piece was obviously the radically different part. And so the city passed a development agreement that was a historical agreement, the first between a city and a developer to allow for no residential parking.
Wow. And then how does I got to ask, because I get this comment a lot on my projects, the garbage situation. Where is grandma going to have to drag her garbage to? Like, how do they do, what is that? Was that a private agreement for a company? Like, what did you guys do?
So there's 7 blocks. Each block has a location with trash cans. And then there's a company that takes those to the dumpster.
Oh, okay. Each night. Nice. See, it's always, there's always a solution.
Right.
You know, you can always figure it out. So how did you keep it moving through, like you mentioned COVID and all that stuff? Like, where were you in the process during COVID? Had it opened yet or?
So we opened in 2023.
Okay, so no.
And we dealt with some of the same construction challenges mm-hmm. that everyone dealt with in the market where, you know, first COVID, which you know, the effects of that are obvious, but the supply chain crisis that came mm-hmm. after was in many ways more challenging for the project. Mm-hmm. And it became hard to get concrete and electrical panels created delays for every project in the city. Mm-hmm. But we worked through all those and we're open today.
Nice. And then, so a question on this one, because it is so different. How did you get funding? Was it that you have to go through a lender? Do you have to like explain it 1,000 different ways to, you know, investors to like, no, it's going to be okay. Like, how do you manage that with this kind of project? That's so new that people are like, I don't even know what to categorize it as sometimes.
So when we started, we got laughed out of the room a lot. Mm-hmm. People said that you wouldn't get entitlements, you wouldn't get demand, and driverless cars aren't going to happen in our lifetimes. Mm-hmm. Those are now very different opinions. It's
right,
open.
Right.
Demand is strong.
Right.
And now it's a consensus. You know, most people say that, you know, within a decade or two, they won't have a private vehicle. So now that's really changed. But there's a number of folks, even in 2018, that when you show them the data of, you know, these transportation preferences and people that understand where these trends in technology are going, that have seen the impact that Lyft and Uber have on cities, that know that Waymo is going to be strong, that can see electric bikes and light rail and how these things play together and understand how much demand there is for walkability. And, you know, we've accelerated that word being in the zeitgeist, and there's now a much better understanding for how much worse car-dependent cities have made our cities. Mm-hmm. And there's now even developers that will brand their projects as walkable when they're not walkable at all.
Yeah,
just because it's become this attractive word.
Just because you can get to the corner in a certain, I guess it's not, there's nothing in there to you want to go to.
Right.
That's interesting. Cause like we hear that all the time, especially when it comes to higher density. I mean, what is your density on this? Did you have to go a little higher or what did you do?
So we're 33 an acre in the first part that we built. Okay. We have 9 acres left. That will build over another three phases.
That's pretty low for Tempe, right? I mean, that's not scary to them.
Downtown Tempe, we used to have an office downtown that is now torn down and is on its way to being a 30-story tower. So Tempe can go pretty high.
Yeah. So are there things you would have, like on moving forward on your yard coming up on Mesa? I mean, you've got other projects. I saw that your company where there's the same kind of design, but I think you have one in Georgia also or something.
Yeah, we have a couple for sale townhome projects. They're pocket neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And those aren't branded cul-de-sac. When we branded cul-de-sac, that's when it has these elements of mm-hmm. The transportation freedom, the thriving local business. Our next cul-de-sac is Cul-de-Sac Mesa. And you
I'm
hear about
so
that?
Excited. Yeah. Yes, I've been, I mean, we've, that's it, how I've been talking because I've been working with like Jeff McVeigh and all of them at the city in Mesa where I live. And I was working on the Historic Preservation Committee and they were just so excited. They're like, oh my gosh, we can't say it, but we want to. You know, they're so excited. Talk about where it's at. It's going to be an amazing site.
So Cul-de-Sac Mesa is right at the core of downtown Mesa. It's 25 acres and it's within a half mile of Arizona State's new campus. And Mesa's got, if you haven't been there in a while, Mesa's got some great things going. Main has already got only one lane on each side of the light rail. Mm-hmm. There's a great set of shops. ASU just opened a new campus. There's multiple new buildings that they've talked about there. And you're going to see Mesa continue to get mm-hmm. better and better. And we're going to be a huge part of that. We are building Cul-de-sac Mesa. And the first phase is over 100 for-sale townhomes. And it's going to be the first for-sale product in downtown Mesa in like 40 years. Mm-hmm. And it's going to bring more people and more energy to the area. There'll be a couple phases after that. And the second phase, if we're lucky, we'll even integrate with something with ASU mm-hmm. As they're expanding down there. The project itself is parked, it's car light. And that means that it has one parking spot for each of those townhomes. But what it looks like is going to be very different from what you see in other projects.
So is there a reason it went car light instead of carless? Was that like the city's just request, or is that just because of the location has different demands? You feel it's being a little further out from a high intensity city, or what was the decision to do that?
I'd say it's something that the city wants. Also, it's a bit off of the light rail, unlike Tempe, which is right mm-hmm. on the light rail. Also, when you do for sale, now when you do for rent, you can sort of wait on these trends to accelerate, where we know that each year more and more people are going car free, that's a demographic. And when you look at that NAR data, the younger demographic is much ahead on mm-hmm. that trend. But when you do for sale, it's about how that is now. Mm-hmm. And so car light, and this is also designed in a way that the spots will transition gracefully over time as each person and each family is ready to give up their car. So you'll see a design that lets a parking spot turn into a courtyard that mm-hmm. allows more room for nature over time. So that it works great now in a scenario where someone has a car, or it works great now if they don't have a car. And over time, it'll make the entire thing better.
Yeah, you had those images on your PowerPoint at the Economic Development Conference, and I thought that was very ingenious. It's like planning, like creating a product now that works, but also creating it for something that could be 20 or 30 years from now. Like, it still will work. Being able to have that courtyard area is very cool, because it's almost like creating its own little cul-de-sac. Like, this is our area, and you get the kids like in Southern California, they have a lot of the alleys, but then they have the court fronts, you know, and so everybody comes out onto this area and kind of plays and stuff. And it feels a lot like that in the images that you were showing. It's very cool. I'm excited. Do you know when you're going to like be able to start on that one, or are you broken ground? Or
we've been working on it for a couple of years, and we'll break ground next year.
That's awesome. And how long, so a project like that, how long does it take to go vertical? Or are you still, are you going, what else do you need to do?
So we'll break ground next year, and you start with the horizontal, mm-hmm. then you go vertical. So a couple of years after we break ground, then we'll be the first residents in. And then we start with phases after phase one.
Do you already have people asking or going on a wait list and stuff?
We haven't started a wait yet, okay. But one thing now I want to make sure everybody knows, go to cul-de-sac.com/Mesa and tell us what you think about the project.
Oh, cool. So are there things with the Mesa project that you'll do differently? Aside from the one car, are there things that you kind of learned on the Tempe site? Like now that there you can see, it's been a while, you can see people living in it. Like, are there things different that you're trying with this one?
Yeah, and you'll see more when the designs come out. Also, ordering the electrical panels right away. But this is going to have a lot of the elements of Cul-de-sac Tempe, where it's designed for people and not cars. And it's going to feel cooler than other projects. Cul-de-sac Tempe feels 15 degrees cooler than the typical projects that we build. And that will also be there in Mesa. People will know their neighbors. 70% of residents of Tempe say they have a friend, which a lot of times when people live somewhere, either single family home or an apartment, they don't know their neighbors anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a real tragedy in the U.S., but that's been very different at Cul-de-sac.
Yeah. I know my neighbors, but I stare outside. I'm like, oh, they're in the garage, and the garage is closed. You know, and you just see my dogs, of course, bark at everybody. It's like, we don't know you, but yeah.
And there's almost this social subconscious thing where it's like, you're not supposed to make eye contact. Like mm-hmm. if you're looking at them, it's like, why are you looking at me? That cars sort of put it like that, where when you're on the road and you look at another driver, it's usually like an aggressive thing.
Yeah.
And
you're like, why are you driving like that?
Right.
You know? Yeah. But then, and on top of that, so if people aren't familiar, so they have, when you first opened in Tempe, you had some, I remember I've seen about a deal with the bikes or something, the electric bikes.
Yeah. So our residents use this portfolio of transportation options. We have partnerships with, you know, Lyft and Waymo, electric bikes, which, as you know, is the largest electric bike company. It's over a quarter of electric bike sold in the U.S. and it's based right here in Phoenix.
Oh, okay.
And we're so lucky to have that in town. You also wouldn't expect it in town, just like you wouldn't expect a car-free neighborhood. But we have Electric Avenue, which is the founder and I, were grabbing a drink one night and said that'd be a good idea to put that at cul-de-sac. But and you'll see a lot of electric bikes parked at cul-de-sac. And that's just part of this portfolio.
So I have to ask. I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask you. So I noticed when I went into cul-de-sac Tempe, the parking lot area, it's not paved. What is that? Is it there a reason that you guys are doing that?
Decomposed granite, and it helps with absorption for water, and the temperature makes a big difference. So we have a problem with the heat island effect in Phoenix, where desert temperatures are supposed to go down at night, but we built so much asphalt that it doesn't do that anymore, and it's made our city hotter. And decomposed granite is significantly better for that.
And so the city did they have to do variances for that, or that they were just like, oh, okay, the decomposed granite works, or is that for the drainage, or?
It's for both. So, there's formulas for what each material absorbs for water that decides how much retention that you build. So it actually is a benefit on that. That's something the city's excited about.
Yeah, it's very nice. It's like it's a different feel. I was talking to Steve Betts on Helios, and they were talking about the same thing. Like when you enter the parking lot, a different feel. Like it's an exhale. It's like and it kind of feels like that. Where actually there with because all of a sudden you're coming off this busy street, and then you come into past the restaurant a little bit, and then you're into this natural parking area. And it just feels kind of calming. It's not overwhelming. You have the buildings right there and the trees, and it's just kind of like, oh, this is kind of nice.
Yeah, and then you get into the plaza. Mm-hmm. You see the retail. There's probably people walking around. And you say, wow, it's weird that car-free is sort of what we became known for. And there was this press more than we ever expected. And it's weird to be known for something not being there. But when people visit, they're like, oh, I get it. It's so that you can get this. Mm-hmm. It's the plaza. It's the shops.
Yeah. Is there, are you going to be trying to do the same thing for drainage and stuff at Mesa, do you think, with the, DG and stuff for areas, where how are you going to manage that area for drainage?
There'll be lots of DG. Each city has its own rules.
Yeah.
And so the exact drainage strategy is a little bit different, but it's going to have a lot of feel like cul-de-sac Tempe.
Yeah. But it's nice because now that you have examples and people are loving it and coming out to see it, it's like you've been like the want to start so that when people propose it in the future, it's not going to be so absurd. You know, they're like, oh, okay, I get it. It works. I've seen it. It's like, thank you for starting that and getting that through. So speaking of how you mentioned, people are recognizing the feel of it and everything like that. Are there other things that you envision from being in other countries that you would like to bring here? That you've noticed or are you still looking around and traveling and seeing things that you're like, I want to kind of go inspired and find things?
There's inspiration from all over. And the biggest thing is that we need more of these in the U.S. We need to build millions of walkable housing. More people want it. It's expensive because we've just built too little of it, but we can change that. And it makes our cities better. It makes taxes lower, climate, health, happiness, loneliness. All these things are better. It's almost a side effect of all these social benefits. That's the biggest thing.
Do you think you'll always focus mostly on with the residential, or would you ever, because you mentioned, the commercial areas in some of the other countries, they have the market, would you ever just create a really cool market?
We have a cool market, great market.
Well, by itself.
By itself. Yeah. And at larger scale, we can do even more interesting things. Mm-hmm. When, people want to live in a walkable neighborhood or they want to live next to a walkable neighborhood. And there's been an explosion of new housing around cul-de-sac, and they advertise that they're next to cul-de-sac. And when homes are for sale, they'll often say, we're next to cul-de-sac. And that really, in some sense, it's competition for the leasing team or whatever, but it makes the area significantly bigger. There was even a restaurant that just opened right across the street in addition to our restaurant. And that flywheel effect is in motion. So we think that makes the neighborhood much better.
Yeah, I can, because I just keep picturing your downtown area is you can see I took pictures. I got so many pictures. I'm going to drop a whole bunch of pictures on my Instagram for this of just the how it functions and it works. And then the pedestrian crossing right there. But then you can see the adjacent across the street, that complex is definitely benefiting from being next to you guys and all that advertisement and location. Is there a portion in the front? I know, is that like another phase that's going in?
Yeah. So we have 9 acres and those will be future phases.
Nice. Is it also residential or is it continuing on with commercial?
So mixed use is a huge part of what we do. And walkable housing pairs really well with walkable retail. And when you have more people in the area, it enables more commerce. It makes it a more attractive place to have an office. And so walkable neighborhoods, we get more walkable neighborhoods.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. And I have to say, okay, I did go to a bunch of the stores down there today. So I went to the So New, which was cool. I got some cool
stuff.
So Used, like SEW. You guys got to check it out. It's fun. They got other stuff aside from clothes. I went to the bookstore, which was really cool. I got some books and unique stuff. And then I made myself their bookmark they have down there. And then the pastry, the bakery down there. And they had a bunch of stuff. They had some like art gallery, a place with like sewing and clay. And it was like all the fun stuff. I saw kids out with their parents, you know, summer break. And they're out, like they had the small library on the in front of one of the stores. Yeah. And looking through stuff and trying to, you know, checking everything out for what their thing to do to the day is. But yeah, it was really fun. Everybody's got to check it out. I'm going to post all the pictures. I got some great architecture. I got the mural pictures. You got the sunshade that has great, you know, light laser cutting in it or whatever in it. It looks beautiful. It's going to be hard to top that sucker in Mesa.
Later this summer, we'll have a nail salon. Yeah. We have Cocina Chihuahua.
I was looking for that. I could have gotten my nails done there. But yeah, it was, and they had like the perfume, and then they have, I was talking to one of the women about, they have the grocer. It's like a smaller local grocer.
Right. Busan Mart. Mm-hmm. It's Korean.
And they said it was great. They love it. It's like perfect. It's all you need for that. You don't need the big thing right there. And if you need something bigger, you can just take light rail or an Uber and you'll be good. So everybody was very happy with it. I didn't even tell them I was going to talk to you or anything.
there's a great bike path nearby that we worked with the city, helped them get a Department of Transportation grant. And so now there's a great protected bike lane that goes perpendicular to the rail. Mm-hmm. And that goes up to Tempe Marketplace and connects to the Rio Salado bike path. And as you know, that's really making Tempe a lot better. They just had 3 new residential towers open in the last month or two.
Yeah, that whole Rio Salado goes all the way, I think all the way Avondale, maybe even further now, and all the way to Mesa and back. And it's a great connector. So
you can bike up to Scottsdale. Can get right here to Old Town.
Exactly. You can go through the wash and all that stuff. So of course I have to ask, cause everybody asks, are you looking at other places? Are there other, cause every mayor wants to hear that they're the next location, you know, or are you focusing still on mostly Arizona for cul-de-sacs? Do you think it would work in other states? Are you just kind of getting, like you mentioned, there were certain criteria you had, like agreeable, like land and location for transportation and the councils, you know, like, are you looking out of state again or maybe not?
Yeah, we do car free and car light. And between those two, they can work in so many different locations. As you know, we're now 4.5 years into a real estate development recession where the higher construction costs haven't come down that much. Mm-hmm. It's harder to get things to pencil. But there also are places that it does. And of course, that will change over time. And I think that you're going to see us do multiple more projects. And you'll also see a lot more projects that look like this because people now have us as the reference project.
Yeah. So you're not, so like you can tell people how to do it and they're not, you're like, it's not just keep it to yourself.
We get so many developers that visit. And a big reason to do this is that it's got all these great side effects that make the city and the country a better place. And so we welcome that.
Yeah.
And hope that people take inspiration from it.
You need to be involved in more zoning code updates and be like, hey guys, this is a hard, this is going to prevent, this will prevent. And just like, no, and give them a whole new idea of how to take zoning code updates to like make things more just happen instead of it being have to change and amend and all that stuff.
Yeah. A lot of folks do come to us for that and say, how do we get more projects like this in our cities? And, you know, there's a big delegation from Washington. Mm-hmm. The mayor of Raleigh was just there. There was 60 mayors that came as part of the Abundance Network in November. Lots of different things like this. They ask, what can we do? There's obviously parking minimums. Mm-hmm. And that's going the right direction in a lot of places. You know, the era of like, if you want to open a bar for people to go drink, you have to make a bunch of parking
right.
so that they can drink and drive. Like people are saying that doesn't make sense anymore. And maybe we don't need to mandate parking because that actually, you know, when you create this car dependent thing, it makes our cities worse. There's things like construction defect liability mm-hmm. reform that hopefully will pass. You know, people want to have more for sale product.
Yeah.
And if you want to build with density and for sale, you need two staircases. You got mm-hmm. all kinds of the liability challenges. And so it's not a surprise that nobody does it.
Yeah.
And cities can make big improvements. And a lot of people do reach out. Sometimes I wish cities would change a little bit faster, but
yeah. And then because on top of that, when I talked to Ryan at the city of Tempe, theirs was a lot, he says, and probably a lot easier than most jurisdictions because they had like a PAD or something previously on it or some kind of zoning that allowed you to be a lot more flexible than just going in and saying, like, if someone was going in for a regular zone and it's like, you know, R16 single family residential, and you're like, all right, let's, how do we put a carless project on this with, you know, density? It'd be a whole bunch of waivers and rezones and all kinds of stuff. I don't know. Do you remember how that was, that they allowed you to that? What process that was?
In Tempe, we had a PUD. There was a development agreement. And of course, there's design review.
Okay.
And across those things is the process before having entitlements. Mm-hmm. A lot of entitlements, they're a lot of work. I think that cities could make things go faster. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the biggest challenges in real estate development is the pre-development expenses where, you know, you have to put significant resources. It can be six, seven figures. And then you might get a no after that.
Right.
And also with time. And so cities that provide more speed and certainty and clarity are mm-hmm. going to get more great projects.
Yeah. Because you have to make sure your lenders or your financing, everything is like happy with it and not nervous. They don't want to risk, you know, it's a risk assessment as well.
Right.
So,
especially when you're doing something new, you get more questions.
Yeah. What is your favorite thing about creating these communities?
For me, it's, you know, I live at Cul-de-sac Tempe, and getting to live there and know my neighbors is the most rewarding thing.
It's exactly what you were looking for. You were in Budapest and you see everything.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a place I also want to live in, a place like this. And it's, you know, I've lived in places like New York and Boston and San Francisco mm-hmm. that have great areas like this and want to see more elsewhere.
Yeah. I've heard that all the business owners there get together like once a month or something and have like a dinner or something.
Yeah, they're close.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And they share stories and they trade tactics, right?
Oh, that's nice. That's good. Because yeah, you don't want like raise all ships kind of thing.
Yeah, and they collaborate. We've been doing Saturday markets when the weather is not mm-hmm. hot. And then now that it's hot, we're doing Third Thursdays mm-hmm. where all of the retailers coordinate events so that mm-hmm. you get a lot more people and more traffic helps all of them.
Yeah. I've heard the Thursday night one is really cool.
Yeah.
That they all come out with something unique about their business or
right.
some activity or something.
Yeah.
So, are there any other passion projects you envision doing or things that you're just like in the back of your mind, like maybe I want to do that also?
So one of the aspects of, you know, so much of our lives gets defined by the neighborhoods that we live in. And so there's already a lot of things, a lot of aspects of it that are interesting. One of the things that I've become passionate about that I didn't expect to through this is plants. And being mm-hmm. surrounded by nature is what you get when you don't have a sea of asphalt. And it started with house plants during COVID and then really fell in love with the outdoor plants. We have so many of them at Cul-de-sac. And that's where a lot of surprising passion came from.
Yeah. So you have community gardens and new ones and stuff like that.
I think maybe. You'll see a community garden.
Greenhouses and plant seminars. And
yeah. And just we have a lot of it around because we have that space because we didn't need to build a, you know, sea of asphalt.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I'm one of those. I get that part of my life too. It's like, you know, indoor plants. It's so sad. Yeah. I was just moving into my new office and I was like, I think I got 14 in there and I still have more to bring back.
Yeah.
Once I figured out how to keep them alive, I'm like, yay, success.
Right.
You know, because they're always so temperamental. And actually, it's funny because the bookstore there, I actually bought a book in there about what plants are really thinking about you. And I love it. It's great. It was some good stuff. But
yeah, the perfect number of plants is how many you have now plus one.
Yeah. Plus five. Go to Lowe's. There's always a sale. Hit out the dying rack and just see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really look forward to seeing Mesa. I'm so excited. Is there like a Is there a different theme? I don't know, because it's like Mesa, it's kind of in the historic area. You're going to try to lean into that a little bit, you think? Or
so when we build projects somewhere, we become, you know, a town square, either the town square or complementing it. With Cul-de-sac Mesa, this is not about detracting from it. This is about adding and expanding the definition of what mm-hmm. downtown Mesa is. And there's so many great things going there, ASU expanding, and we're going to make that even better.
Yeah. I'm excited. So when do we get the pictures? When they start releasing pictures or ideas of what's happening?
We'll get those out there before long.
Oh, before. Yeah. Very thank you. Ambiguous. Yeah. Politician at best, right? Well, thank you so much, Ryan. I appreciate it. And what's the website again?
Cul-de-sac? It's cul-de-sac.com/Mesa.
No spaces, no hyphens, just right. Regular. Right.
Let us know what you think.
And we also need to take a picture of your shoes so people can see your cool ass shoes.
Yeah.
He's got these cul-de-sac shoes with Mesa and Tempe on them. So I'll post those as well. But thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time on the Upfront Planning Podcast.